Hand 1. Loose aggressive players are beaten by information deficits and backwards play. The villain's flaw in this hand is that he is too loose and he's willing to play out of position. The hero's exploit in this hand is that we slow play, we change gears, we get ready for a two-barrel bluff, and we float. This is a difficulty rating 1 out of 4. While he never said a word at the table, this player was generally ticking off the table by listening to loud music through headphones, constantly 3-betting preflop, and giving off an arrogant vibe. I had seen him opening pretty light, even under the gun, with hands like King-Jack offsuit and Ace-5 suited. We were at 2-5 at Foxwoods. This lag internet kid was under the gun, and he raised to 25. It folded around to me in the cutoff, where I called with Ace-Queen offsuit. I had $640. He had me covered. This player was opening many pots for a raise and betting so often that he must frequently have a weak hand. Because of this, we are ahead of his range, even his under-the-gun opening range. We might even have him dominated with a better ace. Lots of frustrated opponents would be tempted to raise here and to stand up to the bully. We are ahead. We should raise, right? No. Resist this temptation. Although we have position and the chance to isolate, we should just call instead. We do this because we know something about his hand, but all he will know about ours is that we choose to play. Good lags, loose aggressives, know they have a weak range, so when people stand up to them, they are safe to fold. Good lags can thrive because their opponents do not hide information well. Betting into the lag, when you have a hand, tells him he should fold. When people passively call them, they are more in the dark. When faced with this passivity, they tend to predictably bet. Their victims fold often enough that this strategy works. When we give minimal information by calling, we start creating an information deficit. His predictable error is that he tends to barrel into opponents, trying to get them to fold. If we hit top pair, top kicker, or an ace, we can profitably call down 3 streets. We know the error he tends to make. We want to set up situations where he is likely to make that error. There is 57 in the pot when the flop comes out, 2 players, and it is 10-6-2 rainbow. The laggy internet kid bets 50 into 57. Remember, we have ace-queen offsuit on a 10-6-2 board with 615 to start at the flop. Since we believe villain bets nearly 100% of his range here, his bet does not carry any information. If we just fold, that plays into his game plan. He bets so often because most flops miss most hands. When ABC players miss, they fold to this bet. On the rare occasion that his opponents hit a flop, he can just fold to aggression. He wins enough small pots to make this strategy profitable. We are not going to fold, yet all we have is a bluff catcher. We cannot call with the hopes of catching a pair or folding to a bet on the turn. If we want this pot, we might have to fight for it. That often means bluffing when the showdown value of our ace high is not going to be enough. So, what do we do on this 10-6-2 board when the laggy internet kid bets 50 into a $57 pot? And we only have ace, queen, high, no pair. We're going to raise to 200, leaving 415 back. Think to ourselves, what would a typical bad recreational player do here with a great hand like a set? They would do exactly the wrong thing and stand up to the bully, giving him the information he needs to make a good fold. So that's what we do. Raise it up. We threaten a second barrel of the bluff with a turn shove. We can also think from the lag's perspective. When he gets raised big like this, what does he think we have? People very rarely make cold bluffs like this, and there are no big draws to be betting out with. Sets and big overpairs are the most likely holdings. This also uses a concept known as leverage. When a bet on one street implies an even bigger bet on the next street, you get to threaten the all-in amount while only risking the smaller amount. He open-folded ace of hearts, ten of hearts, for top pair, top kicker, with a backdoor nut flush draw. As he folded, he said, "I do not want to stack off with just top pair to your set." Notice he specifically says he does not want to stack off. He thought we were going to shove the turn. We got $565 worth of fold equity while only risking $200. That is leverage in action. Notice also the bet sizing. We made a strong bet, about the size of the pot. I see many people bluff at the pot for too small of amounts because they are afraid to risk more than that. The problem is the smaller raise is not very effective, so it loses money because it will get called too often. The smaller amount is actually the riskier bluff. I was honestly surprised to see he was so strong there. I would not have tried to take him off that kind of hand had I known. Playing backwards worked well. He put me on exactly the hand I was hoping he would. Lags have come to learn that kind of resistance is a big hand, so I use that to my advantage. Notice also we switched gears. We started out pre-flopped slow playing. Normally slow playing is a bad idea, but against the lag, this backwards play works well. When we missed the flop, we needed to switch gears and play backwards a different way. We started bluffing when we had nothing, even though our original plan was just to call if we connected with the flop. This may seem like a shocking move to make, firing in a $200 bet with nothing. This is not reckless aggression, though. It is calculated. Look how we folded out a hand that really hit this board. As far as flopping a pair goes, this was a perfect board for his ace-10 suited. Even so, he found a fold because this move looked so strong. Every other time this has been done to him, he was against a better hand. We are mimicking the play of ABC players that hit a big hand to get a fold when we want one. This play was specific for this kind of loose aggressive player. He is smart enough to read hands and thinks that players only play back at him when they hit. Doing this to a nit would have been a very bad plan. Now let's look at an alternate line. Instead of raising, let's call the flop, and then we will bluff raise the turn. So if we flat call, the pot will be 157 and we will have 565 back when the turn comes. The turn comes a 7 of spades, making the board 10 of spades, 6 of hearts, 2 of clubs, 7 of spades. We still simply have 2 over cards. At this point, in the $157 pot, it's reasonable to believe this lag would bet another $120, and then we could shove in our remaining $565 and very often get him to fold. This alternate line of play would also be a reasonable plan since he would likely fold to this surprising aggression just as he did in the actual line we took. This is a riskier play, but gets another $120 into the pot before we bluff. Now let's look at another alternate line where we call the flop and then he checks the turn and we bluff. So again, let's say the 7 of spades comes out, basically a brick. He checks to us in this alternate line, so then we can fire in a $125 bet into that $157 and often get a fold. If he decides to check the turn, that gives us even more confidence that he has given up on his hand, making this bet a really high percentage play. Let's look at a new hand. We started the above hand as a slow play and turned it into a bluff. Here we play backwards again, only this time for value. We make it difficult for the lag, because even out of position, we keep the information about our hand minimal. This hand is played at 1-2, and we have an under-the-gun limper, an under-the-gun plus 1 limper. In the cutoff, a lag raises it to 12, and we are the hero in the big blind and call with 8-8. Both of the under-the-gun limpers call. We are pretty happy to try and flop a set at this point. We look at the stack in front of the lag, 412, and there's 40 times the value of our call available to win. In addition, it is very likely two others will also call this bet. This immediately gives us 3.5 times our call in a situation where we flop a set once in 8 flops. Having more people in the pot increases the chances that someone will pay us off. Now let's say that the flop comes out 6 of hearts, 8 of clubs, queen of clubs. So we have flopped a set where a flush draw and some straight draws are possible. We're in the big blind and we check. The two original limpers check and check. And the lag bets 35 into this $49 pot. We simply call, and the remaining two limpers fold, leaving us heads up. There are straight draws and flush draws on board here with a 6 of hearts, 8 of clubs, queen of clubs, but we have a premium hand that we need to protect. We should bet, right? No, not when this player has the lead in position. His problem is that he bets too much when he sees weakness. We need to feign that weakness to get as much money in this pot as possible. Against other more passive players that call too much, we could bet this hand out for value, hoping to get called by the draws or weaker made hands. We are hoping to get stacks in against the lag. Can we do it? With $400 to win and $50 in the pot, a pot-sized bet on every street easily gets it in. With even a three-quarter pot bet on every street, it is almost all in by the river. If one other player comes along just on the flop, then even a three-quarter pot bet will easily be all in by the river. What about protecting against the draws? Let's give him one of the worst possible draws, 7 of clubs, 9 of clubs. He is still a 40-60 dog on the flop of 6 of hearts, 8 of clubs, queen of clubs, to our set because of redraws. Because we have observed this player is willing to bet too often, we need to give him that chance. Because his range is so wide, any particular draw should not be that scary to us. If he has a made hand with a queen, he will do the betting also. Imagine for a minute he has a weak queen here and we lead out on the flop. He might call once, but not twice. If we were to check to him though, he might bet two streets. Because of his wide range, he has air here often, and a bet will just get him to fold. It is in his nature to bet into weakness. Let him. So now we get to the turn, and the pot has $119 in it. The board reads 6 of hearts, 8 of clubs, queen of clubs, and now king of diamonds on the turn. We check, and the lag bets 100 of his remaining $365 stack, and we cover him. What should we do? Most of the time, draws do not come in. What did come in was a nice barreling card, an overcard. True to form, our lag bets. With our call, he has $265 left in a $319 pot. Now it comes down to style and reads. What will get the money in? These are our options in order of preference. If he will call, shove the turn over his bet. If that isn't going to work, we should try and minimum raise the turn over his bet and then shove 165 the rest on any river. Our third option is call and evaluate the river, but never fold the river. As the pot gets bigger, the need for deception goes down and the need to take the pot goes up. The biggest fear is the flush card hitting on the river. Let's look at his odds with a few reasonable hands. In order that I expect him to hold these, a combination of combinatorics and experience, I expect on the 6-8 queen king board him to often have pair no draw, like king 10 or ace queen. His odds against us are zero. Will he call the turn check shove? Very unlikely, and we don't know what he would do on a river flush card or a river non-flush card. The next most likely thing that we expect is him to have a flush draw, like ace of clubs, nine of clubs, or king of clubs, jack of clubs, and he would have about 16 to 18% against our set. He will usually call the turn check raise shove, and he will often bet the river on a flush card, but we don't know what he would do on a non-flush card. Next, I would expect him to have air, like ace of clubs, nine of clubs, and he would have 0% equity against our set, and he is very unlikely to call our check shove, and we don't know what he would do on any rivers. The next most likely thing I would expect is him to have two pair, something like king-queen, and against our set, he only has about 9%, and he is very likely to call our check shove. Again, we don't know what he would do on the river. The next most likely thing, I think, would be a combination draw, like ace of clubs, jack of clubs, and he would have about 22% equity versus our set, and he is very likely to call our check shove, and he's usually going to bet out when the flush comes on the river. We don't know if he would bluff at a non-flush card. The next most likely is he would have some kind of a straight draw, like ace-10 or 7-9 for 9% or 18% equity. He might call our check shove, and we don't know if he would bluff on the river. And finally, he might have that combination draw like 7 of clubs, 9 of clubs, where he has 30% equity. He is very likely to call our check shove, and he will usually bet out his flush if it comes on the river. There's a lot of hand reading and combinatorics that goes into putting him on a hand. There are 9 combinations of top 2 pair. He would likely play all those combinations this way every time. There are tons of combinations that give him air, but he would not play them all like this, since he would give up on many of them on the turn. The rows of this chart that I read out are in order of my guesses as to the relative likelihood of him holding these types of hands combinatorically while also taking into account the betting. These are rough guesses for a typical lag without specific reads. Maybe the hyper-aggressive lag has air more often than a weak made hand or a flush draw. However, to be considered a lag, he needs to sometimes have air here. Most likely, I expect him to have a pair and no draw. Rarely, he is going to show up with the specific open-ended combo draw of 7 of clubs, 9 of clubs. Should we check shove? Typically, we have a much better idea in this situation how the lag would react to our shove because it really comes down to math for him. How he will react to our flat call is up to much more debate. We just don't know what he's going to do on the river. It depends on the player and how he feels about us. It cannot be quantified as easily as his reaction to our shove. The only thing we can say is he is likely to bet whenever he makes the flush. The right play here is something you need to decide at the table. The guesses above are simply my beliefs as to which of these hands he would use to call the shove. It also shows that it is hard to guess how he would react when checked to on flush and non-flush rivers. We have two competing interests. The first is getting value from his river bluffs. The second is trying to get value from draws in weaker hands that will call the turn. If we do not bet now, he would play his draws perfectly on the river against us. If he has a bigger set, it is all going in and there's nothing to be done. Traits that will make me want to flat call are: 1. He will 3-barrel with air but fold to our raise now. 2. He will 3-barrel with a busted draw. And 3. He will bluff if a flush card hits. Traits that will make me want to shove now: 1. He will call with a variety of decent made hands and draws. 2. I am not getting more value from the air, and he would only fire a 3-barrel when he hits his draw. And 3. I am not getting more value from his weak made hands. He will neither bet them nor call with them anyway. We are trying not to give ourselves a negative free roll on the river. A negative free roll is a situation where a weaker hand would call us now, but by checking we rarely induce a bluff, yet we would call off our stack if he has us beat. The less likely he is to bluff the river, the more we need to bet now. There was a lot of value in checking the turn to get his second barrel, but now there is value in getting stacks in, unless you have a good reason to slow play further.